Come on, Jake.
It's only your lice.
To honor
the hawk tour girl, I will say,
it is the mucus
that binds us.
Welcome, everyone, to the Brackish Podcast. It has been a long, long waited time. We are your hosts, Knock.
Cliff.
Cliff Biffington back in the
DC. It's only been 16 months, 13 days, 8 hours, and 13 minutes since we last did one.
It wasn't, you know, no problem at all. Just, how'd you know that?
I just made it up.
Okay.
That's what happens when you have kids. You just make stuff up all the time.
We're going to tell you about some great stories today. We love the corrupt politician. It is getting so much traction in the world today with our politicians. We're going to tell you two great stories. One is a current story, and one is in the infancy of Louisiana corruption.
Ooh.
And really the major player in giving Louisiana this sort of normalcy to corrupt politicians.
Yeah. Just to let everyone know, the whole deal is we don't know, or we have a name of what the other's going to talk about. We don't know the story.
No, I have no idea. I have a little bit about knowledge about your story, but I don't know the in-depth of what he's done or accused of doing. He's convicted.
So that's how we do it. If you haven't paid attention to us before, if you have, awesome. But if not, it's just kind of the off-the-cuff reaction. First time hearing it, that's what you get.
Mm-hmm.
So. What years?
This is in the late 18s. Middle 1870 to 1890.
So pre-internet.
Oh, yes. Very much so pre-internet.
Pre-everything.
Pre-printing press. No kidding. Oh, pre-car.
Pre-car.
Pre-car. Because the way he dies, he doesn't die in a car accident.
You had to fox people back then.
He did. He did.
But yeah, I mean, 1870, that's early times. That's only 100 years.
Pre Huey P too. That's what's so great about this story.
100. That's 100 years into America's existence, sir.
Mm-hmm. It's right after Civil War time.
Yeah.
They were called the Radical Republicans in Louisiana, and so this dude was a baller.
So for those who are listening on their audio device, phone, computer, whatever, this is back when a time where you could sit with people and talk to them face to face.
Yes.
It's an old school tradition, but.
All right. So I'm going to get into my story. And it is about a guy named Charles T. Howard in the Louisiana Lottery Company.
Ooh, have fun with the Louisiana
Lottery. This is not the Louisiana Lottery Corporation. Don't get that twisted.
Mm.
That's a whole different ball game. They were the first one to come back in the game many decades later after these guys got the kibosh.
Charles Terrence Howard. It's actually Terrence Howard's great, great, great grandfather.
The Terrence Howard stuff is amazing when it comes out. Every time I see it, it makes my life so happy. Charles Turner, not Terrence Howard, American businessman. And what he did was born in Pennsylvania, moved to New Orleans back in 1850. His original name was just Charles Turner. He added the Howard when he got to New Orleans. And he began working as a lottery and policy dealer. So policy would probably be like insurance policies and lottery. He's working for the lottery of different states.
Nice. Okay.
And he's working for the lottery system out in Kentucky for a firm. And the Kentucky firm says, hey, man, we notice that you do well with the lottery, but we'd love for a lottery to be down in Louisiana as well. So Charles takes his know-how down to the Louisiana legislature back in 1866, for this Kentucky firm, and the effort to get a Louisiana lottery fails. But 2 years later, Howard's given $50,000 by this company to come down here again and change the law to make sure that it does allow.
$50,000 in 1870.
Back then, $10,000 is about $200,000. Okay, so you're looking at about what, a mil?
You gotta be.
You're looking at a mil by this firm in Kentucky to come down here and get everything going. So you gave him about $1 million. Okay, so in 1868. Right, Louisiana goes through it, and happens to be, man, Charles Howard used that money really well, because the Louisiana legislature says, okay, yeah, Charles, you can start this new lottery system here in the state. Just make sure that you give $40,000 to Charity Hospital every year. That's what you got to do. Charles is like, awesome. This is great. So his firm says, Charles, this is awesome. This is great. You got the lottery for us in Louisiana. And Charles says, no, I got the lottery for me in Louisiana. And so the firm is like, oh, like hell you do. The firm sues Charles.
And so, how long did that take till he got, you know, served?
Till he got served. Oh.
you want to sue me? All right. Well, I'll be here.
Try to get the Postal Service behind me. Well, come to find out, they go to court, and the court says, look, everything y'all did about this money is illegal, so why are you coming to us with this? And the court throws it out.
Yes.
Charles owns and operates the Louisiana Lottery Company by himself with another guy called John Morris. And Morris was kind of the everyday runner of the business, and Charles was like the face and the head of it. Okay?
Damn. That's pretty cool.
In January 1869, the company starts. The Louisiana Lottery Company gave Howard and his partners 50% of the profits, and the other 50% of the profits went to the stockholders, which Howard and his buddies were also a part of.
Oh, imagine that.
Yes. So they're getting pretty much all the profits and splitting them between themselves and the stakeholders. So the charter says that the lottery system can operate for 25 years in Louisiana, tax exempt. You have to pay no taxes either. Just give us $40,000 for Charity Hospital. Right off the bat, $2 million a year is just in that half pot I was telling you about.
Damn.
This is 1870 money.
I get it.
Right?
And $2 million in 1870. I'm listening.
$2 million in 1870. So he's getting this chunk of $2 million, and remember, he's getting that. So they're giving out a good bit of money in the winnings too. And what made the Louisiana Lottery Company so profitable and popular was that the Louisiana Lottery Company could be sent via the mail. This was the only lottery gambling system that you can send via the mail and still be legal. Every other state did not allow you to be out of state and send it in. Not only could you be out of state, you could also be out of the country abroad. So the Louisiana Lottery Company is raking in dollars from across the world. Right, for people that are lottery hungry, you know, like it's a game, it's gambling. They do it daily, they do it weekly, they do it monthly, and they do it semi-annually. They do drawings, and all the numbers would be put into a basket, then twirled around. Yep. And to make sure that these drawings were legit, they hired PGT Beauregard and another Confederate general to stand and watch over it.
I'm PGT Beauregard.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Beauregard.
We should go see a statue.
No, you can't. Get out.
Take it down.
They had a certain amount of tickets that they sold for each of the drawings. And when that certain amount of tickets didn't get sold, what the stockholders in Howard would do was buy those extra tickets.
Yeah, so like a raffle.
Right. So they would buy the extra tickets, so then they could win the winnings and the profits.
That's amazing.
Right?
That's how you do it.
So Howard and his partners are raking in the money. And they're also bribing politicians. By the first year, Howard is paid off every politician in Louisiana that can be bought.
No.
Has been paid off. PGT Beauregard, right, just to come stand there a few times a week, right, got paid $10,000 a year. $10,000 is $200,000. So if he's paying one guy to come watch his drawing, you can imagine how much he's paying the politicians.
So $2 million is around $48 million in today's money
per year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Wow,
that's a lot.
So, like I said, Howard is paying agents on the floor of the legislature, not as lobbyists. These are House members he's paying to go lobby for him. So even the governor of Louisiana acknowledged the lottery's sway. The mayor of Baton Rouge would be selling tickets openly for the Louisiana lottery.
So the regulation on it was zero.
Yeah.
I mean, they had so much power that they basically regulate. They
picked the regulators.
Yeah.
Yeah. They picked the regulators so much that they bribed the entire...
There was no regulation. They made it. They just said, no, this is what we're going to do.
In 1879, they bribed the entire legislature to extend the charter, and legislators were accused of receiving $10,000. Again, they like that number, for casting votes in favor of the company. And when the state treasurer, this is a great one, when the state treasurer, Edward A. Burke, was implicated in the corruption, he fled to Honduras with more than $1 million of state money.
Smart.
Right? The single largest case of political corruption in Louisiana history. All right, Burke refused to return to Louisiana to face charges, and he used his fortune to become an important political figure in Honduras.
I was fixing to say...
Start a lottery in Honduras.
I didn't know if you looked into what he did, but I figured that if he went to Honduras, he either started something himself or bought
a ton of land that would benefit his family for, like, generations.
Oh, he was... in it to win it. Don't know what happened after that. I'm sure he, died in Honduras or something. It was just not only but rich white people that were benefiting from the lottery as well. In Howard's obituary, it says that poor black people would openly tell stories about how much money the lottery company would pay them to pay them off for something. Like if they saw something or if they were... doing something, or they could help them with something. The lottery would pay them off.
I don't know if this happened, but I just think about court cases. They could use that money to pay off a witness or somebody who didn't even see anything. Tell somebody, pay somebody to make up something and be like, yeah, we need this guy out of here, so we need you to tell this story. Here's this money. Tell him you saw this. He goes to jail. You get your money. We continue to make money.
They're handing out $10,000 like lollipops.
Yeah.
And $10,000 is $200,000. You know shady businesses are happening all around this company and this guy, Howard. Right? Howard is living the life at this time. He owns he builds like a beautiful house on St. Charles Avenue. It's got the most luscious garden as well. And then he also has a house in Dobbs Ferry, New York. It's an upscale place in New York, suburb of New York City.
Upstate?
It's a suburb of New York City. Mm-hmm. So probably not upstate, right? Check out where Dobbs Ferry is, BBS.
I will.
It is upstate, you peasant.
He's got this beautiful, it is upstate. Okay.
It's on the Hudson.
Okay.
It's not as far to, Cliff has been to Sleepy Hollow, and
FDR's estate and the Vanderbilt's estate on the Hudson.
Ooh.
So it sounded like a Hudson property, which I was correct.
It was. It's along the Hudson.
Yes. You're welcome.
Is that a beautiful part of the world?
That means he had more money than he knew what to do with.
Oh, really? Okay. He's like, I got stupid money. I got a house on Dobbs Ferry.
Yep.
Okay. Well, yeah. Charles Howard becomes a filthy rich man. This is what it says in his obit. He was exceedingly liberal in spending money, or he had an object in view, or whatever he coveted, he made most strenuous and determined efforts to get. He allowed no obstacle to stand in his way of gratifying his desires, and what money or tact could gain was his.
I'm just putting this into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did I visit FDR, not only did I visit Vanderbilt, but the one estate that I visited in Hudson Valley was John D. Rockefeller.
Uh-huh.
This dude had, and that might have been the only guy who had more money, had the most money at that time. I mean, he was equivalent to a trillionaire, basically, the amount of, like, monopoly he had over the trains and oil and all that. So, to have a place on the Hudson Valley at that time, you were a big baller. And Rockefeller was looking down at you like you were a peasant because he had a massive amount of land up there. But just to put it in perspective, I mean, that's a lot of money.
He was hanging out with Rockefeller.
I'm sure he was. That would be an interesting thing to look up.
If you're chilling on the Hudson back in 1880...
I mean, I doubt they had a super yacht, but I'm sure someone was like, you know, we were taking a canoe upriver to John D's place, you know?
Yeah.
No one called him John Rock. I mean, that sounds stupid. You know, John D.
So, like John Rock, to maintain his good public relations, Howard would donate a ton of money to charities and stuff.
Yes.
To the fire department, schools, to flood victims. In Louisiana, his children established Tulane University's Howard Memorial Library. Okay, and gave some money to some other things. He was not, however, kind to getting snubbed at places. Two places in general have stories about him getting snubbed when he went in and tried to become a member there. So one time he tried to go to theater, and they told him, "No, man. We ain't having your likes in here, right? Because we know that you're corrupt."
Because of the color of his skin?
No, because of the money in his pocket that he gave to everyone except then. So he said, cool, no big deal. He secretly bought the theater, and when the theater company didn't pay their lease on time, he was like, GTFO,
yeah.
So, bow.
That's when you know, that's baller status.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go behind. Oh, you don't want me in here? Okay, I'm going to buy it. And then you're all gone.
The second one is better because it has a certain place. If you're from the New Orleans metro area, you know of this place. And, okay, before he bought this place, it was called the Metairie Jockey Club. So Charles Howard goes to the Metairie Jockey Club. He's like, they have like... racetracks or something, I guess, for horses and the likes. And Howard has a bunch of horses. He says, "Hey, I'd like to become a member of your jockey club." The jockey club says, "No, we don't like your kind here.
We don't like your kind.
We don't appreciate you lining everyone's pockets and making things corrupt in Louisiana." Well, he says, cool. And he buys the Metairie Jockey Club, and he turns it into a cemetery.
Oh.
That is now the Metairie Cemetery on Airline Drive. You know, it had like, it looks like a big like loop.
Yeah.
That's because it was a racetrack.
Oh, was it? Yes, that's correct.
It was a racetrack. Yeah. And Charles Howard bought that because they told him he couldn't come there. And he's like, "I'm going to turn your place into a cemetery and be buried here." And he did.
"And I'm going to bury you right outside the fence."
He probably did. That's right by shortstop Po' Boys. There is this graveyard site across the street on Airline. And those are just stories in the news. Imagine if you crossed him in it didn't go so well, right? I'm sure he had power uncontrolled. He's a smart guy, too. So in the 1970s, 1980s, the state constitutional convention wants to outlaw the lottery. And so Howard pays off enough people. They don't vote on putting the outlawing lottery in the Constitution that year. So what Howard does is he sues a guy that's selling Havana lottery tickets in Louisiana, right? And he pays the judge off to put in his dictum that the Louisiana lottery is the only legal lottery in Louisiana. And no one ever appealed it. And so that just became precedent. So he's killing it on how smart he is about beating the system. Yeah. Not only will he beat it by paying someone, he'll also beat it by, okay, I'll take it to court and pay someone in the judicial ranks as well. He's doing great. He's making all this money. He's got his Dobbs Ferry land. And in 1885, Charles Howard dies at the age of 53.
No.
He falls from his carriage outside of his house in Dobbs Ferry and dies from falling out of his carriage, being thrown out of his carriage. And he dies 3 days later in considerable pain, it said.
Huh. Okay. Sounds like an inside job.
That's... Everywhere I looked, there was no sort of conspiracy link to it. Maybe I gotta get deeper. Maybe I gotta search with DuckDuckGo. I don't know. But it seemed weird, right?
I mean...
He's got all the money in the world. He falls out of a car at 53?
So it's Hudson Valley. You got the slopes. He could have been, you know, riding, trying to be, you know, the next carriage rider or whatever. And
yeah.
Took a hard turn.
You can't control a horse sometimes, right?
No, you can't. So I don't bet on horses. it's stupid. But anyway, it does sound like an excuse someone made for beating somebody to death. Oh, he fell. Oh, we don't know what happened. He fell off the carriage and the bruises were so bad. He had all this internal injuries, we couldn't save him. Like a hit. Somebody was taking him out from all the stuff he did.
His family continues his legacy, his philanthropy, giving, and they also continue being the head of the Louisiana Lottery Company. His son takes it over and amasses a fortune. He's getting in revenues $4 million a month. And about 60 of that going to prizes. But remember, he's still raking in for prizes, too. So he's at least raking in $2 million a month back in 1885 money. So things kind of changed, though, in 1888 when Louisiana elects Governor Francis Nichols. You remember his street, Governor Nichols?
Governor Nichols.
Governor Nichols only had one arm, too. All right, so that was kind of weird. Governor Nichols makes it his point to get rid of the Louisiana Lottery Company. He's like, too much corruption. We got to stop this. And so in his 2 years, he's trying to stop it. And again, you know, Howard is just paying off politicians to keep like, no, we're not going to write legislation for that. And if it does come up, we're knocking it down. And, you know, this is Howard's son now, so he knows the game because his dad's been doing it forever. But then in 1890, federal Congress says you can no longer sell lottery tickets via the mail. If you do, that's a crime. So all of those lottery tickets that they got from out of state, that gets knocked out. That's 90% of their revenue. Right there. Boom. 1890. The feds come in and shut them down.
The government did.
Then back Fast forward a little bit. March, they try to renew the charter. It was defeated, but then an anti-lottery candidate, Murphy Foster. Mike Foster, you know these guys, the connection now? Governor Mike Foster's people. He wins the governorship, and they get rid of the Louisiana lottery once and for all.
Wow.
And the lottery didn't come back until 1991. The Louisiana Lottery Corporation.
That's crazy.
Came back.
That took that long.
For them to start up again. But Charles T. Turner, not Terrence Howard, was the man behind the whole plan. And from being a G, from starting up the company from someone else's money, and then saying, no, it's my company, not yours, and then paying off politicians and people because he knew money talks. And let's give it up for Charles Howard.
Guy knew how to play the game.
And that's what made corrupt politicians in Louisiana sort of normal. It started this trend.
Yeah, so people just...
Because everyone was doing because the Louisiana Lottery was able to collect that much cash and dispense out. That's what's kind of cool about Louisiana politics is they, in a way, were able to funnel so much money into the state with the use of this lottery, but then fumbled it in the sense of why not use it for the state funds? They used it to then put back into the pockets of the legislators.
Yeah, they didn't use it for good.
No.
They used it for bribery and to enrich themselves. Sounds familiar.
Sounds very familiar.
Huh.
Seen a few movies over that thing.
Yeah, I think so.
So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back just a little bit with yours and gold bars and strippers.
Ooh, that's strippers.
Okay.
Maybe. Of course there probably were.
Okay.
We can throw in, we don't have to be factually correct.
Right.
We can make stuff up.
I think that's a good theory, though, that corrupt businesses allow corrupt politicians to flourish.
Well, yeah, because think if you had dirty money coming through your business, how else to get rid of it than to donate so that no one asks questions? When the tax man cometh, like, oh no, we made this many donations. We don't owe that much tax. Come on, man.
My friend.
Look how many philanthropic. They like to use that because they're like big words, you know.
Philanthropic, yeah.
Look how many philanthropic donations I made.
Uh-huh.
I'm not trying to do any accent. I'm just saying that's what businesses.
Politician accent.
Yeah, they're just trying to. They're just trying to make it.
So what's the theme again? Political corruption.
Oh, sorry, I forgot.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Robert Menendez, a.k.a. Bobby Menendez, a.k.a. Bobby Mims.
You know, I heard his name first, and it makes you think of Menendez brothers.
It does.
He's no relation to those guys, right?
He could be.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't look it up.
Okay.
He could be the triplet that got away. And just kept it going. Hit under the radar. And this is the interesting part about these people is that right now, because it's so fresh, is that we don't know a lot about the young political career. But what we do know is that the political career started in 1974. What year is it?
Then 2024.
So subtract that. How many years is that?
50 years?
50 years in politics. So
wow.
Tell me this. Can you stay not corrupt in politics if you've been in it for 50 years?
No. Obviously not.
One way or another, something. If you have,
I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to.
Right.
Because there's probably no way you'd reveal that anything ever shady happened in your 15 years of politics.
Something shady happened. You were in the room where it happened. Something shady happened in front of you.
Yeah.
Something.
And you can go, well, nothing shady happened. But there was a loophole. Okay. Well, then you found something.
Yes.
You
yes.
know what I mean? Anyway, so this guy, I'll be formal. Robert Menendez. I'd like to call him Bobby Menz because it just sounds.
I think that's cool.
Way cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because now he's going to prison, so he's got to find a cool prison name. He started out in 1974. He was an aide to the mayor, and he was also an aide to someone in the New Jersey legislature. And so he did that for
mayor of where?
In Union City, New Jersey.
Okay.
So then in 1986, after working under mayor and being in the government and all that, he ran for mayor and he won in 1986. And he was mayor of Union City, New Jersey for 6 years till 1992. He was also, I don't know how this works because I think every state is different, but he was also in the New Jersey legislature at the time. Not a representative of a place, but like general sort of, I guess he could make state decisions as well as keep his mayoral job. I don't know how that all works.
It's a small state, right? So the
not really. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, a lot of people that live in New Jersey.
No, I mean, a lot, but he's in charge of a lot because he's the mayor of a lot of people.
Yeah,
so he could still like give his input at government decisions.
The fact that you can be at the city level and the state level at the same time is corrupt beyond belief, but I don't.
Oh, it's kind of bonkers. Yeah, that's true.
How you could manage both of those jobs. I'm sure he got paid for both. So he did that till 1992, and then he was a representative. I don't know what district in New Jersey, because I just don't care because he's corrupt as shit. He was a representative for the state of New Jersey, somewhere in Congress, and he was there for 14 years. And then, once he got done with that, he became a senator for New Jersey. So one of two until from 2006 to now. Well, until his indictment. He still is, I think he's still active.
Right. He hasn't resigned.
He has not resigned. And we'll get to that.
Right.
So there's his political career.
And let's. It's flying here, right over us.
Yeah.
So let's.
It is. He's just, yeah, that's the plane going to pick his ass up to send him to the Club Fed. So, if we can hear him. So, in 2015, this is no relation to what just this happened. He's now senator. He's now the senator. He's one of the
New
senators.
Jersey.
Yeah. He's one of 100, or 100 or 102?
100.
100?
Uh-huh. I think.
Yes, because D.C., is it?
Still doesn't have.
Whatever. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he's one of 100, one of two in New Jersey. 2015, he was indicted on federal corruption charges.
Corruption. Senator Bob Menendez was charged Wednesday with accepting almost $1 million worth of gifts, trips, and campaign contributions in exchange for political favors. Yesterday, Menendez pleaded not guilty to the 14 criminal counts against him, including 8 counts of bribery. While defending his innocence, Menendez said that prosecutors had chosen to twist my duties as a senator and my friendship into something improper.
But the jury was unable to reach a verdict, so the charges were dropped in 2018.
Judge William Walls declared a mistrial after members of the jury sent him a note that said they could not reach a unanimous decision on any of the charges.
The way this case started was wrong.
Prosecutors alleged that Menendez did political favors for his longtime friend, Florida eye doctor Dr. Salomon Melgen, and in return, Melgen provided the senator with free luxury travel and more than $750,000 in contributions that benefited his run for re-election.
Didn't disclose the gifts that were given, because if you receive stuff, you have to disclose it. Just like if a business owner gives a donation to a campaign, they have to disclose that because they can put that. It's public information.
You heard that, Clarence?
Yeah. Clarence Carter or Clarence Thomas?
Thomas. You heard that? Just let us know who's buying you stuff, yeah. Man. Just let us know.
And it was, you know, and people suspected of him using his senatorial status as to advance this doctor's interests. Well, let me tell you who the doctor was. This guy's name was Dr. Melgen, or Salomon Melgen. And in 2018, this guy was sentenced to 17 years in prison.
All new at 5, a West Palm Beach eye doctor was just found guilty of Medicare fraud. Solomon Melgen was convicted of stealing as much as $105 million from Medicare by falsely diagnosing and treating patients. Melgen's attorney says he's being prosecuted for honest mistakes. Melgen faces
anyone
up
listening.
To 20.
I have no political affiliation whatsoever. Independent. I'm not one way or the other. Mm-hmm. I like to hear both sides. I like to
you support the troops.
I like to hear people talk.
Yeah.
I like to hear people's opinions, and I like to know what they're about. And one of the last acts as Trump's presidency, you know, these presidents, they leave, they start pardoning people. Well, guess who was one of the pardons?
Bobby Ben's boy.
He was pardoned, and this was one of the, but federal prosecutors said this was the biggest Medicare fraud case in U.S. history.
And Trump pardoned him. Trump was like, hey, man.
Yep. So this guy served about 3 years of the 17-year sentence, and then Trump pardoned him. Now, I don't know. The guy was in Florida, and this is this. I'm not speculating anything. I don't know if this guy donated to Trump. I didn't look all this shit up. There was a thing where it said, like, and I don't know. I didn't look up. I can look it up if you, whatever. This guy's wife had cancer. But to me, I'm like, you still were a piece of shit.
Right.
Like, that shouldn't be pardoning you from, like, maybe how about you think about your wife before you start frauding people? You know what I mean? So this isn't a knock against Trump. I don't look. Presidents are privy to way more information than I am.
Right.
So I have no idea. All I'm just giving you the facts. He was a part of the pardon.
I like that this guy's connected to
it. Yeah.
This
is, it doesn't matter. So think about it. In January, every outgoing president has a list of pardons. It always happens.
Right. Who like?
It doesn't matter who. Like you just. They always had this list of everyone comes to them like. Wow, my family member, this, they were wrongfully accused.
Yeah,
blah, blah.
Can you imagine it's just like the Godfather.
Yeah. You come to me on the day before the inauguration.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. He's going to pardon people.
He's going to pardon
people that we don't even know about, and I'm sure there'll be stories and we'll probably.
Connected to other people like this.
Yeah, so.
That's cool.
That was a lot of babble. We don't have to keep that in.
No, but it's a cool little bubble off of Bobby Mins.
So, Bobby Mins. Thinks he's like, oh, I got all Bobby Mins. Hey. September 2023, he's indicted again.
A high-ranking Democratic U.S. senator who is no stranger to facing down federal prosecution, New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez and his wife Nadine indicted by a federal grand jury in New York. Accused in a sweeping bribery scheme, according to the indictment, the couple accepted hundreds of thousands of dollars of bribes in the form of cash, gold, luxury cars, and mortgage payments meant to secure the senator's power and influence for the benefit of three New Jersey businessmen and the government of Egypt.
I don't necessarily think it's treason. It's almost like an agent, federal, like a double agent sort of thing.
And close to espionage.
Yeah.
But not quite.
Charged with conspiracy to act as a foreign agent of the Egyptian government and also accused of working for the government of Qatar. And then just recently, 4 months ago in March, he was indicted on corruption, or I'm sorry, of obstruction of justice. So, like, I'm sure he tried to get rid of evidence that he, like, you know, oh, I'm indicted on this. Oh, they started, like, shredding papers, and, like,
During a search of Menendez's home, prosecutors say they found $480,000 in cash, including these envelopes stuffed into one of his suits, more hidden in a safe and in closets. According to the indictment, Senator Menendez also abused his powerful position as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
What does Bobby do, like any good man would do, when he gets indicted? What do you think he says? Besides, I'm not guilty.
I didn't accept anything.
Wrong. He blamed his wife. So, like I said, what any good man would do. My wife did it. I had no idea. My wife did it. Check all her books. She runs the calendar. She's got the bank accounts.
Yeah, she pays the bills.
Yeah. My wife did it. So, in comes Nadine Menendez, not the first wife, second wife. Started dating in 2018, so 6 years ago. Obviously, looking back on it, it seems that this relationship could have been out of love, but based on the federal indictment, appeared to be a business relationship out of moving forward. After they started dating in 2018, she introduces him to a business owner, last name Hannah. He owns a halal meat market certification company.
Okay.
So this guy introduces Menendez's, if it was Nadine or Bobby, we don't know, to Egyptian intelligence, military officials. They're dining at restaurants, flying back and forth, meeting and blah, blah, blah.
Because they know the halal guy.
Yeah. But think about it.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
If this guy can go, basically they were going back and forth to the Egypt officials to be like, hey, you regulate this halal guy as your monopolized main certification company. And then we'll give you, we give you kickbacks off of that. He makes all this money because he's the only one who can get certified to send meat through from here. Boom. Money to be had. And so.
To certify it. So you just make sure the certification comes through.
Yeah. And so.
Okay. That's where it comes down to the bribe.
Yeah. You make my guy the official certification company of Egypt.
Uh-huh.
Nobody else can send meat through. This guy's got to check it.
This is my halal guy from Egypt.
Yeah. And then he makes all the money, but he can't keep all the money, obviously, so he's got to give it somewhere, or else people are going to start asking. Like, why is this guy the only certification? Like, why is Egypt only sending their shit across Atlantic
right
to this guy? So I said these people are smart. They thought they were smart.
Yeah.
And they went to dinner, and this is one of the things, this is in the court documents. They thought they were doing their, they were being all covering it up, all good. They got a guy, an FBI guy undercover, who's just like a couple tables away. And he hears a conversation that says, what else can the love of my life do for you? So apparently it's Nadine talking to one of the Egyptian officials or whoever it is, saying, what else can the love of my life do for you? So she's like the go-between. Because I don't think he was there. You know, it's kind of like
these meetings.
If his face is there, people are going to see it.
Right, right, right. So they were able to like hide it behind Nadine.
Yeah, and mind you, Nadine is battling breast cancer right now. Her trial has been postponed to August. So she is under 15 federal indictments fixing to go to trial.
Oh, boy.
He had 16 indictments, 16 charges. All he's been in, guilty on all charges. He's waiting for sentencing. Her trial has yet to begin. But it starts in a month. So basically, the wife, Nadine, and this guy, Hannah, were just the go-betweens or intermediaries between the senator and Egyptian officials. And they were talking about people at the U.S. Embassy in Cairo. And they wanted to help senator's colleagues support U.S. and Egypt. And they asked Nadine to fix a letter because Hannah was trying to give her clearance for a project, and it was just all this corruption bull crap that was going. They were just trying to
hide stuff,
make money.
Yeah.
without the public knowing.
We also allege that Senator Menendez improperly pressured a senior official at the U.S. Department of Agriculture to protect a lucrative monopoly that the government of Egypt had awarded to Hana. A lucrative monopoly that Hana then used to fund certain bribe payments.
They could have spread the wealth between a couple of certification companies and nobody probably would have batted an eye. But when you just have one guy and everything's got to flow through this guy, it kind of seems like, why is this the only guy? And then people start looking and then they're like, what's going on?
And this guy's got really close tie to Bobby Mintz.
And also,
Senator.
These, you know, the halal guy and these two other businessmen, well, guess what? They're not the most upstanding citizens. They're not running the most legal businesses. So they're using their ties with Egypt and all and Qatar, and they're trying to use their pull for criminal investigations against these business owners too. So it's like a, you know, you give me the, if we can send our stuff to the certification guy, well, then we'll also help him with like any, we'll give him money for these criminal investigations, or I kind of like the same sort of thing we were talking about, is like paying people off to say stuff or not say stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like turn, you know, hey, when this guy walks in, just turn your head and don't pay attention. You know,
we'll pay you a bit.
So in exchange for all this stuff, they allegedly receive stacks of cash, there's pictures. Gold bars. Gold bar Menendez.
After getting the gold, Menendez allegedly searched how much is 1 kilo of gold worth online.
You know, and a luxury car.
That's a good nickname in jail.
Gold bar Menendez?
Gold bar
Menendez. Yeah, because you know he's like, look, if you just help me out, I got a gold bar waiting for you.
Yeah, I got a fucking gold. They're taking those. The federal government's taking those, right?
Who has gold bars besides Nick Cage and
Did you hear about the gold bars? Did you hear about them specifically?
No, what?
I heard a great story about
them. Are they engraved with something?
Yeah, some of them are engraved. They have markings. Some of them are stolen gold bars. Like gold bars that are known to be, they're stolen from companies or the government. It was stolen from a safe somewhere.
Indiana Jones is pissed. I know that. He had it. I know, who has gold bars?
That's what I'm saying. He was such in the fucking black market that he had the black market.
I just like want one. I want one. I wish I could have one gold bar that nobody knew about. Ooh, just so I knew.
Yeah, that would be great. It would feel good.
Just if that one instance, somebody was like, hey, like somebody breaks in your house and they're like, got a gun to your head, like, where's your money? I'd be like, dude, I got a gold bar. And that's it.
From Sam's.
Take that. Yeah. It's got a Costco engraving on it. But it's legit. Weigh it.
Weigh that Costco shit. That has them.
I don't. No, that's good. Yeah. It's got a fucking Sam's brand on it. No, but I would love to have it. And so a fun fact about this whole thing is, and it's not relevant to the case, but it just shows you like just what these people are dealing with is Nadine was in need of a car, which the luxury car came into play is because she destroyed her car in December of 2018. When she hit and killed somebody.
And her and Bob just met?
She was not charged in that. No, I think they were together, but she was not charged in the death of that pedestrian. So I'm not saying it wasn't legit. I'm not saying it was legit.
Right.
Somebody knew somebody. Somebody's in whatever.
But when you hit a pedestrian, you're supposed to be like, you know.
There's charges. There's
yeah.
Involuntary manslaughter, negligent homicide, whatever. It was dropped. Who knows? Somebody could have ran across the street. She just was driving and bam, hit him.
Oh, they were dropped. There was charges, and then the charges were dropped.
Yeah. But we don't know why that happened. So, yeah. But anyway, that's why she needed a new car.
Let's see the report.
Bam. So, apparently, what Bobby Mintz was telling people was that or what his attorneys were saying is that, oh, Nadine kept me in the dark about the financial matters. So my boy Bobby didn't know that his wife was doing all these deals and she was running the financials. Bull effing shiz. The prosecutor's like, well, you used your wife as a go-between. And the attorney was like, oh, she kept things from him. And she kept him in the dark. And on what she was asking for others to give her, she was outgoing, fun-loving, like, oh, you know, socialite, whatever. But she wasn't going to let Bob know that she had financial problems. So I have a very, very argumentative statement against that, because your new wife, who you may or may not trust, you don't have any clue that your wife has financial problems. You have no idea what your finances are. You trust this woman wholly, your second wife. You trust her completely with all your money. I think that's kind of where I almost feel like the jury was kind of like, I mean, obviously there was other evidence.
But you can't act that naive.
I feel like you're like, yeah, you like, if it was your wife of 40 years
and there's obvious, like,
you gave, like, and you just had this trust, and but all of a sudden, like, you had no idea where your money went behind your back. Like, you had stuff, but like, you just,
but you were actually doing the certification for the halal stuff.
Yeah.
You were doing, you were making steps to making sure that this was all going through.
Yeah. And it just, I think it all,
without your steps, these things would not have happened. Your wife then would not have gotten this amount of money.
It smelled a little tainty. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Bad, bad.
After a nice 102 heat index day. That's how it smelled. What they found was they accepted bribes from these three New Jersey businessmen, and that benefited the governments of Egypt and Qatar, like you said. And they also meddled in criminal investigations of these businessmen. And one of the businessmen, Jose Uribe, he testified for the prosecution, because I think he was probably like, oh, we're fucked. And now I've got to save my ass, and I'm going to take a plea deal. He basically told the jurors, I bribed them.
Uh-huh.
I bribed this couple directly. I asked the senator twice for help in resolving criminal investigations involving mine and my business associates. And he pleaded guilty, and he's, I don't know if he's, I guess he's not sentenced yet, but he pleaded guilty in March.
He said the senator,
yeah,
twice made two criminal investigations go away.
Yeah.
Against him.
So he bribed the couple.
Gosh.
He basically bribed them both. And then basically, obviously, Nadine, the power is not there. So he asked the senator directly.
Right.
Because he's the power guy. Hey, you know. So what tells me, if this guy, if the senator was not guilty, then he wouldn't have stepped down as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And he is the first sitting member of Congress, and I don't think he's the last, to be convicted of conspiracy by a public official to act as a foreign agent.
Wow.
He has been found guilty, as have two New Jersey businessmen who were accused of bribing him. They have also been convicted. So far, all defendants, Joe, have been convicted on all counts.
New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez intends to resign next month, effective August 20th, according to multiple sources.
This country was founded in 1776. So you're talking about I'm trying to do the math, but I've been drinking. So 1776, 2026 is 250.
250? Yeah, almost 250.
So almost 250 years.
Ooh.
And he's the first one. It took 248 years. Was he the first one? He was the first one.
Convicted.
Convicted.
Yeah. Sitting, too.
Sitting.
Could you be a former one? Yeah.
Abso-freaking-lutely.
Okay. Who flipped and was like, y'all need to look at.
I think the businessman flipped.
Oh, right.
I don't even know if it was a businessman. I think.
Deliverers?
If you. I'd have to look. It just seems that the FBI something looks shady with some deal. I don't know who leaked it, but it had to be something like, why is this guy getting, why is it all coming through him?
Mm-hmm.
And it could have been
his wife.
It could have been another halal certification guy. Could have went to the FBI and been like, why is this, I do the same business. Why is this guy getting all the business?
You know what part would make it? It was a loved one of the pedestrian.
Oh, we love doing speculation.
That Nadine hit.
Yeah, let's speculate.
That, so it was a loved one. And after the charges got dropped, they were like, I am not quitting until I find out what the Menendez family is doing.
It's good for a movie.
And then bam, 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 bam. Found out all this shit.
This is all true.
Yes.
So we're going to say all truth here.
Uh-huh. So thank you for letting us earn the right to speak with you tonight.
I hope so.
Or today, or whenever you're listening, right? This was recorded on the back porch of my house. If you heard a train or a bird, that was probably what you heard. And we hope you enjoy the podcast, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
We'll see you next Tuesday.